Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Well, I'm finally back on the air. I'm so pleased. It was such a technical nightmare. My computer, my setup here in my new home, it's been unbelievably chaotic. But it finally all came together, and then this morning I'm trying to dial in. And I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to get in. So we are here, and I'm so happy to hear that. However, right now my stream is telling me that I only am on the air for 15 minutes, and I'm supposed to be on the air for 60 minutes. So we'll play this by ear. I want to talk to everybody about all the things that have been going on in the news. It's been a crazy hot summer. You know, years ago there was a drama that came on called The Heat of the Night. And even way back then, I thought to myself, it's so true. When it stays so hot for so long, it's like our brains get fried. And all kinds of trauma takes place in our world. It's always amused me, amazed me, and made me wonder why that's true. But it is true. You have Hurricane Andrew in 1994. There was no AC so many places. And people kind of went crazy, not being able to cool off. So I'm wondering if that has anything to do with the last month of, we have Michael Brown in Jersey. We have, Missouri. We have Aaron Hill here in Florida. We have, of course, the sadness of losing Robin Williams. I don't think we can attribute any of what was going on with Robin to the heat of the night, if you will, but I don't know for sure. I'm going to bring Shelley in. Now I'm scared that we've only got 12 minutes. good morning, honey. How are you?
Good morning, Reen. Why do we only have 12 minutes?
Well, I'm not really sure. This took me probably 6 hours to get this all up and running yesterday. I ended up having to call AT&T and have them come rerun phone lines. I set the show for 60 minutes at 8 o'clock. I could not set it for 3 days a week. I set it for 5, but, of course, this week I'm gone, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, so the next show will be Friday. But my stream is telling me that I'm on the air for 11 more minutes, and so I don't know what the deal is with that. But I think we can keep talking, and I think we can stay on the air, because usually if we run over a couple minutes, it stays with us. So what I'd really, really like to kind of, if you will, clear the air a little bit about is some of the tragedies. We did have a show about Robin Williams, so we'll leave him towards the end of the show. But I'd like to talk about Michael Brown. Today is his funeral. He's the young man in Missouri. Ferguson, Missouri, who, according to all accounts, was shot 6 times. And there seems to be a reason that isn't public yet as to why the officer that shot and killed Michael is not under arrest. They're doing lots of, examining of all the issues, I guess. What's your take on all of that, Shel?
Well, in one of the, I think it's that case, on one of the accounts I had read, he was actually trying to get into the police car after the police officer, and they said there was some sketchy information with regard to that, But, I mean, why would a perpetrator be going after a police officer? So, I mean, was there a scuffle where he got the gun? Or, I mean, I think there's a lot of missing pieces that are being kept out of the media that would basically exonerate the police officer from wrongdoing. Maybe this kid attacked him and took the gun or something. So I'm not so sure that the kid was an innocent bystander, just based on that little tidbit which got my attention.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that or hear that. I find that very interesting, but I didn't see anything about that. I do want to say, though, if there is a reason, it's still a little hard. Like if I, you know me, I always try to put myself in somebody else's seat, and I think to myself, okay, what would I be doing if I was the chief of police, the director of the police department, whatever the case might be, or sitting on the board of people that are going to make the decision.
Right.
6 bullets for me is kind of whatever the reason, you got them, you know, you got them. So I'm struggling with
why
there was the need for 6 bullets.
Well, see, that's why it sounds to me like it was done in the heat of the moment. It was done in a panic mode. Nobody fires that many when they're under control. You're firing
exactly
when you don't know that you've gotten the assailant because there's some sort of a struggle. That's what that sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm. That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like major fear mode kicked in.
Right, and it also, I'm curious as to whether or not they determined whether or not the shots were at a distance or at close range, because that makes a difference. If they were at a distance, no, you don't need to shoot more than once. But if you're having hand-to-hand combat going on and somebody's trying to get your gun and it gets fired multiple times because you're grappling over it, you know, I could see that. So I'm saying we're missing too many pieces of the puzzle to really make a judgment here, but of course the public is going to be outraged. It's a police officer against a young person, you know, and without getting all the facts, you know, because unfortunately there have been shootings that have been unwarranted and that have been, you know, sometimes even racially motivated, even though you don't like to throw that card out there, you know, but there are some police officers that do act inappropriately because they have the power to do so, and they bring their personal prejudices into light when they make a decision. I'm not so sure that that's what happened here, though.
Well,
this case in Missouri, I'm trying to find the article where I read that about him going into the car. This is the one in Missouri, right?
Yes, Ferguson,
right,
Missouri.
While we're trying to see if I can find the original article. So,
well, I think what bothers me more than anything, like you just said, and you and I have talked about this many, many times. We've talked about the fact that training, psychological welfare of people that work in our protection arena need to always, I mean, you know, like we see that on Law and Order, and we see that on a lot of the shows where the IAD or the IA something comes,
IAB.
And when there's a shooting or something, they come and everybody has to be, you know, analyzed and talk for a few minutes about what happened and everything and get a reading on the psychological place that particular police officer is in. But
right.
For me, it seems I remember many, many years ago, I'm going to say maybe 40 years ago, having many friends in the Ithaca Police Department. And they were continually having to do psychological workups. They had questionnaires that they had to fill out. They had meetings that they had to go to. They had people that they had to have open forums with, especially during the times of unrest unrest, black versus white, because a lot of your police departments now are a heavy black ratio against white ratio in the police department, which I thought was
right.
going to be great. I thought that was going to maybe solve some of the unrest. I don't know that it did, but all the cops I knew had to, had to do stuff at least every 6 months where they went in and talked to somebody and they got a reading on where their head was at. Now, this officer is not a newbie. I want to say he's been on the force for several years. The number 12 is coming to my mind, but it could have been a different article that I read. But he's not brand new at what he does. But six shots, Shell. I don't even think a raging bear calls for six shots once you've hit him in the head. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So something was wrong.
Did any of the articles say that?
It said six shots, and the first shot was right to his brain. So he was gone with the first shot. So, but again, if you're scared to death, if there's a real innate fear or anger, I can see that happening, right? So even though I don't think it's fair of us to analyze something, we've never even met the man or talked to him, either one of them for that matter, the talk in the family, of course, is one of love and protection and everything, and that's what it should be. But this is just like Trayvon Martin.
Right.
You know, you have to, you will never know because it's two sides to a story. But my heart goes out to the family today, burying a young son. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody, nobody, nobody. And I think it's sad. No matter what, it's sad, sad, sad. So I hope that we can eventually get to a place where our world is not so black and white. It would really be nice because it really shouldn't have anything to do with it. The other thing, of course, that we discussed in passing last week on the one show that we did was the fact that then everybody gave some significance to all of the bad feelings by going around and looting and hurting other people and going crazy. But I
don't
have
understand
to wonder.
Looting. You're pissed off
I
at the police,
either.
So you
mm-hmm.
loot shop owners who are trying to make a living. How is that showing your disdain for the police by injuring innocent bystanders? Now, if you're going to loot something, loot the police department, you know, throw bricks through. I mean, I'm not advocating violence, but I'm saying that would almost be understandable if people did that because they were angry with the police. But you're angry with the police, so you steal from your neighbors? You steal from innocent bystanders? How is that showing your disdain for what the police did? It's ridiculous. I've never understood riot mentality because what it does is it adds insult to injury.
Well, exactly, and gives other people's negative feelings some support.
Mm-hmm.
See? You know, how many people did you hear say, see? See how everybody acts when something like this happens? I mean, do you think that's right, Renee? That's what I heard all week. And I'm like, no, of course I don't think it's right. Of course I don't. But do I think it's... I don't know, has a little bit of normalcy to it. If you look at our history, I think it must. It does. What about after a hurricane, honey? What about after a hurricane when everybody is so devastated, there's still a small group of people who, I can remember way back, Hurricane Donna. This was in the early 60s. I lived in Florida, and I remember asking my mom why people were going through broken windows at shoe stores and broken windows at drug stores and taking
wow.
whatever they wanted. I said, is that okay? I remember saying to my mother, is that okay? Can they do that? Can we do that? And my mother said, no, Reen, that's stealing. And I said, well, why are these other people, it seems so, if you'll forgive the saying, it seemed very black and white to me. You either, if you can go in and do that, then it should be all right for everybody, or it shouldn't be all right for anybody. But there were people doing it way back then. Well, and look at all the things that happened in the 60s in regard to the unrest between, the races. So anyway, I think this may come to a dead end, just like the Trayvon Martin case came to. There's still speculation in different articles that I read that he was a bad kid. I don't know that being a bad kid means somebody should jump on your back and shoot you because you have a hoodie on. I mean, if I look at it at face value, it seems kind of ridiculous. And the same with this, but I don't know. And I don't want, I want our police, our defenders of justice, I want them to be safe. I think we all want that.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody, one of my kids said, Mom, I've been at concerts, and the cops say, everybody down on the ground. If you're not down on the ground, you're in trouble. You'll get maced. Something will happen to you. And, of course, we laugh about it because I say, yeah, I can see me getting down on the ground, then it's going to take four officers to lift me up again. I said, that's not going to happen. I'd probably just stand there and look at them. Are you serious? And my one son says, Mom, they'll still try you to get down on the ground. They mean it. They're trying to gain control. Well, when he said that to me, that made sense to me. And I remembered a funny thing that I used to say to the kids when they were all little. I watched 11 kids every day. And if everybody was all in chaos and I'd been out of the room for 5 minutes on the phone or putting something in the oven or doing something like that, and I'd come in and it was like, you know, mass chaos in the living room, I'd say these infamous words that came to haunt me through the years to come, get up and sit down. Get up and sit down. I'll never know why I said it that way.
Now, listen to this. This was something that was on Fox News. So this is why
okay.
I'm saying I want to – I think we should resume this on Friday because I want to spend some time on this. This article is from the 20th, and this was on this was from Fox News, and it says here, Darren Wilson, the Ferguson police officer – whose fatal shooting of Michael Brown touched off more than a week of demonstrations, suffered severe facial injuries, including a bone fracture near one eye, and was nearly beaten unconscious by Brown moments before firing his gun. A source close to the department's top brass told Fox News, and then they go into more details. Now, this coincides with the other article that I had read the day after the shooting, which I'm trying to find, and I can't seem to find it again. That was probably too old. I didn't save it in my favorites, so I'm going to see if I can find that, where they said
okay.
that he actually chased the cop into the cop car, and then the shooting took place moments after that. I mean, so maybe this kid was – there's something wrong. Why would you attack a police officer and beat him that brutally? Obviously, the cop was trying not to shoot him. You know, but if
I have a question. Why is it in all the news that we see now with this young policeman, I don't see any aftermath of that? Because I've seen him. Maybe it's old shots, maybe old videos. I don't know, but that's what people are going to say. No, I've seen him on TV. I've seen him being questioned. And there's no bruises on his face, honey.
Hmm. Well, this is Fox News, so that's what I'm saying. So that there's a couple of different stories out there. Now, you're talking the police chief or the actual cop?
The cop. He's a fair-haired,
Aaron Wilson?
Blonde guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm gonna research this a little bit more today because
okay.
there seems to be stories circulating about this, and you know we're not talking some obscure. I mean, this is Fox News and CNN, so it,
mm-hmm.
it, you know what I'm saying. We're not talking, you know, like the Inquirer,
right?
So it I'm finding it a little odd that we're getting such disparaging stories depending on what news media you're looking on. Why is one source not even mentioning this and another one is? And then you're telling, I haven't seen the videos with the cop. But sometimes facial bruising takes 2 to 3 days to come up. It's possible that these videos, not everybody takes that long, but I've actually heard of bruising taking up to 48 hours to actually show. So it's
well,
possible.
Well, on that note, let me say that it's been a month today since I fell on my knee, and I still have... I mean, it's nothing like it was. It was horrible. The kids told me my knee looked like the moon because you could see all the blue craters and everything. I mean, my knee was a mess, all swollen.
Oh, boy.
But I still have significant bruising down my ankle, on my foot, up the other side of my leg. So you're right about the bruising. However, a cracked bone in your face pretty much shows up right away, and I would be closed, stuff like that. But let's do that.
Let me research today.
I'm
going to look in a couple other sources, see if I can confirm or deny. But I just remembered hearing that this kid chased the cop, so I don't know if he got the cop's gun or he got his billy club or whatever. But if a cop's trying not to shoot you and you're being aggressive towards them, I can see a cop backing away. I mean, sometimes you see it in these fictional shows. You know, you'll see somebody who has a knife or a bat or something like that, and a cop's got a gun, could easily shoot them, and they're going, you know, step away, step away, step away, and then they finally get cornered, and they start shooting. And it almost sounds like that's what happened here, if, in fact, any of these stories are true that I've read. But this is the second one that says that the kid was being the aggressor to the police officer. And if there was any truth to the fact that he was severely injured next to his eye, you're dazed at that point. I can see firing 6 times and not even realize you did it if you're in that state of dazement.
Uh-huh. Pretty good shots, though, for somebody who's out of it, though, too, right?
Yep. They must have been close to each other.
I'm interested to find that out too, and I'm going to be very disappointed if you, not through any fault of your own, but if you can't find out more truth, that's going to disappoint me.
I'm going to look at the latest. I'm going to compare it to some of the articles that came out when it first happened to what's happening now, because some of these articles were from yesterday. This is from the 20th, so that's 5 days ago. And I'm also looking like CNN and, you know, and the big – I don't want to read, you know, ragtags. I'm trying to go with reliable sources and see what –
Oh, yeah, I would never take it. I don't – matter of fact, whenever I read something, because it comes up all the time when I'm doing research, the Huffington Post, I usually check it against, something else because there's often – you know, too much baloney going on out there, for sure. Well, but regardless of what happened, for the time being, we'll set that in a corner of our room, and Shelley's going to research that, and we'll get back to you with that. But I do want to say that somebody still lost a child, and we can't be with our children all the time. They do foolish things. We did foolish things. I just wish, that sounds, I do more than wish. I really hope and pray that someday we'll get to a place where this isn't the way to fix anything, a gunshot to the head, or attacking because you've been caught doing something wrong. The first answer is to hurt somebody. Shouldn't always be the first thing that comes to you. We've all done stupid things, everybody. If you're doing something really, really illegal, you know, if you're going to play, you're going to pay. And that's a choice you all have to make. So often everything that happens to us comes down to our own personal choices. So remember that.
All right.
When you're wheeling and dealing with anything, your job, your life, your spouse, your children, whatever. So The other story, by the way, while we've been talking, I was able to get in and fix my time. So I'm getting so talented. I'm so pleased with myself. I can't tell you. I want to talk about Aaron Hill. Now, this is something else that I want to bring up before we talk about the story. There was a picture posted on Facebook, which is never reliable, folks, never, ever reliable. Fun, amusing, but never reliable. But on Facebook, there was a picture of, they said it was Aaron Hill. And, I mean, fat lips, closed eyes, bruised face. And then I saw him at the big rally that his family gave for him for support. And I didn't see any marks on his face. Nothing. And he's a big boy. And so I did a little bit more research. I couldn't find any place, and the beating that is on video shows him covering his face almost the entire time, on the floor, huddled. It's awful. No two ways about it. It's heartbreaking to see that. All the beatings we've ever watched between young people are horrific, in my opinion. But years ago, I watched two girls, after trying to stop them on my lunch hour home from work, they continued to beat each other for like 4 hours. And they were two normal, everyday women that I knew pretty well. We were young. We were like 18. But they beat the hell out of each other. And the two of them looked like they'd been in a bad car accident. And nobody could stop them. So I don't know whether pent-up anger or the inability to not give up and think the other one's going to win. I don't know what kicks in. But it was awful, and I've never forgotten it. And they're both gone now. One of them died at a fairly early age in her 40s, and the other one died just recently. But through the years, we talked about that privately, and I was like, what were you thinking? I just couldn't give up, the one girl said to me. I thought if I gave up, she was really going to kill me. And I guess that's probably the feeling that happens. If you're that scared and there's that much fear, I guess our mode of survival kicks in and we just do whatever we have to do. And maybe that's what happened this day. So, but this Aaron Hill story is sad. And I'm going to read a little bit about this because the facts, I don't want to screw up the facts. But two people were arrested in his beating. And they're calling him a child. And I don't. He's a big boy. When you hear the word child, you think of like a 10-year-old. He's not. He's a good sized boy, and I think he's 16. But Andrew Wheeler, who was the 18-year-old who beat him at a party in Okeechobee, Florida, the video that they have that a family member took, by the way. It's been said that he is on the autism spectrum, which is not autism. It just means there's some learning disabilities. And he said the young man who beat him, now here's the other side to the story, said he received a call that there was a drunk guy at a party and he wouldn't leave. He says he drove to the residence and went inside to take that person home. After walking outside to answer his phone, Wheeler went back inside and said he was told that the teen was punching and pushing another person. Wheeler claims then that he attempted to take the teen outside to try to strike. When he attempted to take the teen outside, he tried to strike Wheeler. So he would be Aaron, and Wheeler is the 18-year-old who the video shows beating on him. Then there's Evadine Lidecker Daly, who was also arrested in connection with the party. She is accused of giving the teens at the party alcohol. And outrage over the video spread quickly and sprouted the Facebook group and hashing Justice for Aaron. The campaign has attracted the attention of tens of thousands, including celebrities like Breaking Bad's Aaron Paul. In a follow-up report, WPTV says Wheeler's family now fears for their lives. My daughters have come to stay with me because we're afraid, Wheeler's grandmother said, who declined to have her name published. They are putting our addresses and names and everything on Facebook, and people are saying they're going to kill our family. Wheeler's grandmother also said the family has decided not to bail him out of jail because they're worried someone will try to hurt him. He would never target a child with autism. He wrote an apology letter to the boy and his mother and turned himself in, the grandmother said. Now, see, these are things that you don't hear about because they're not as, they're just not as tragic or as, what's the word I want? They're not as sensational. Sensational.
Yeah,
it's
not as exactly.
So, but the deal here is I saw Aaron on TV with his parents at a roadside with signs that said support Aaron. I don't know if they're trying to raise money. I don't know what the money would be for. Aaron looked totally fine to me. And he doesn't appear to be challenged in any major way. And now that we find out that a 16-year-old who has some traits that could cause some learning disabilities was drunk. But there's been no, I haven't read anything, and I looked at about six articles last night. And I see this story, but it doesn't go into detail. So, again, the media has played a very, very significant part in all of this, a very, very significant part. And I don't know if it's always in the favor of us as the public, or in the favor of either party that's involved. I certainly have had my share of episodes with the media, and they can be amazing, or they can be after sensationalism. I still don't talk very much about my grandson on the show for reasons like that. But I will tell you, on all the interviews I did, I probably did 30, if not more, interviews. And some of them were at 5 o'clock in the morning at different television studios all over South Florida. And a couple of the interviewers, and I'm not going to say who they were or who they were affiliated with, but they did everything in their power, short of promising me a reward to say something bad about the boys that hurt my grandson. And
wow.
I wouldn't do it. I would
wow.
not do it. And the reason I wouldn't do it is because I didn't think that was fair. Why should I have an open forum to turn everybody against three boys that are already in so much trouble that they are not going to see the light of day for some time to come? It doesn't seem fair to me. It doesn't seem fair to me what they did to them. Don't get me wrong. If I had them in a room by myself, it might be a different story. But I wasn't going to feed any other piranhas. And,
exactly.
I think that that's a lesson to be learned by all of us. Plus that, when you spout negativities and you choose your words carefully, when someone else gives their rendition, you do not know what words they're going to use to explain what you said to them. Does that
mm-hmm.
make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, because I said I've had the same issues with when I was interviewed when I was running the animal rescue, the ferret rescue out of my house. And I was very well known in the area. And twice I was approached by newspapers to do, because they have pet sections in the newspapers and stuff like that. And because I was the largest in South Florida, I was approached by two different newspapers. The first one did a halfway decent job. So the second one misquoted me something like eight times. I was flabbergasted. I mean, just absolute misquotes, where if I said, don't ever do this with a ferret, And she wrote, you know, director Michelle Villarreal says that you should do this at least once a week. I mean, it was the complete opposite of what I said. I was so angry, and I called the newspaper, and I sent letters to them for going on like 6 weeks. I could never get them to print a retraction or even call me back. Now, they pestered me for like 2 weeks because they had heard through a lot of people. I was the only one. I had the biggest operation in South Florida. I had over 115 ferrets at one time. They had pestered me for 2 weeks, calling me almost daily to get this interview, and then once it was a mistake, I couldn't get anybody to return my call. I went up to the ranks. I even sent letters and emails in. I could never get them to correct the article, and I was misquoted 8 times. I was so upset. What I should have done is gone to a competing newspaper and tried to, you know, do something about it, but I was so busy at the time, I kind of dropped the ball. So now there's this article out there forever that has me saying things I never said.
Yeah. And that's happened to me in the past too. Years ago, when it never bothered me. It wasn't malicious or anything. We got amazing support when our house burnt down. But I will say that they would take some of my adjectives, my description words that were in my sentences, and move them around to give different meaning to some of the things I said, and that kind of amused me. It didn't hurt me in any way, and it didn't really change the fact that I was so proud of the way friends and neighbors stepped up to help us. But I thought to myself, now why would they do that? Does it give it more? I don't know. More sensationalism if I said it the other way around, but they did that. And I was very careful in the years to come. Very shortly after our house burnt down is when Mike got hurt, and I was interviewed quite a bit for that. And I was real careful about what I said about Michael. And then, of course, I got real lessons with young Mike. So you have to be careful. You really, really have to be careful. And that just shows it, because everything that you and I both have dug up on these stories, there's very the nutshell of them is the same. But the extenuating circumstances can extenuate as long as my arm. So... It does make a difference of what you read. And, of course, what about the people who only read or only look at what's on the news? So it is what it is. I appreciate one of the things that they do on the Today Show now. They have that little chat with 4 to 5 of the members of the Today Show. And when they do that, they discuss pretty openly some of the things that are going on and give their own personal point of view. And I must tell you, I believe that that segment in the Today Show is truer than a lot of the pre-written information that they're given to read on the air.
Yep, yep. Well, because then you start hearing the different nuances of just the dry news. In other words, you have a newscaster that says blah, blah, blah happened, you know, and you're just hearing some static facts without any extra information, without any additional details that might sway you one way or the other. And if you just listen to those couple of facts that are blurted out, you're going to walk away with a particular impression of something. Then when you have 5 people sitting around discussing that and kind of adding some nuance to it, some extra detail, some opinions, you start seeing in your own head that your impression of this thing they're discussing starts getting kind of altered a little bit, refined, so to speak. And you start getting a truer idea of what happened just by hearing other people discuss it and giving their take on it, because you say, wow, I didn't look at it that way, or that's an interesting detail or something like that. So it is better when you have a collection of people discussing something than just a newscaster reading, off of a cue card, a couple of static facts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you're right. I don't know, I'm assuming, and I could be wrong about this, that when most of your newscasters, like WPTV, I watch that every morning between 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning a lot of times. I don't even get out of bed. I just turn on the TV and watch it in the bedroom so I can get a feel for what's, you know, happened while I've been asleep. And everything that you hear on those kind of local shows is stuff that's prepared for the people reading it. So
right.
It's not about personal input or personal feelings. It's about something that's been designed for them to read on the air. And it should
exactly.
be just, right? It should just be the facts. It shouldn't have a personal connotation to it. It should just be, this is what happened today, and this is why, according to our sources, this is why, according to our sources, this is the outcome. Pure and simple. But I do like it when they kind of discuss it like we do to open up, I don't know, the variables in a story. Otherwise, everything has a tendency to be too flowery or too blood and guts.
But the bottom line is what you just said is kind of the point I'm making, is that when you just read static facts, and they're missing details or they're missing some of the extra comments that would come out in a conversation, sometimes you get the completely wrong impression. Point in case, if in fact, and we don't know that it's true yet, I'm going to research that, but if in fact this kid had beaten that cop before he got shot, that certainly would put a different spin on the story. So if you say, Missouri teen shot to death by police officers, who shot him 6 times, that sounds completely different than if you were to say police officer who was being beaten by teen shot in self-defense. So you're just adding a couple of extra words, but that sounds totally different than the first sentence. There's still static facts. There's no opinions or emotions being put in there, but the one sentence invokes a completely different reaction from people than the other sentence. And unfortunately, that's what happens a lot in news when you have, they're being scripted, they're getting little, sound bites to put out there in the news, and they're, a lot of times, they don't have enough details. So this little snippet that they're saying is only part of the truth, but because it's only part of the truth, the listeners, the viewers, are being given a completely different impression about this piece of news that they just heard, and they might think that the person was right or wrong when actually the reverse was true in a particular situation, because you're just getting a little blurb. And the media does that, again, to be sensationalistic, because maybe the real facts would lead people down a different path, so they kind of do an abbreviated version of the truth, But what's that saying? Half a truth is something the same as a lie or something. I forget how the cliche goes. But when you talk in half truths, it you really are, tantamount to lying, because you're giving people a completely wrong impression about a particular scenario that took place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's true in every facet of our lives. That's true, and you and I have talked about this on the show many times. There's, there's your side of the story, my side of the story, and the truth.
Right.
It just is that way. And it's seldom done with intent. I don't say something different from Shelley because I want to, be right and make her wrong. Shelley doesn't say something different from me because she wants to be right and make me wrong. We have a difference of opinion or a different way of seeing a specific scenario. And I think that that's kind of missing in the world of media.
We do have
a lot of media people, though, that express themselves, and they tell you that they're expressing themselves. Somebody we talked about a couple weeks ago who started out with good intentions and became too sensational, and that's Rush Limbaugh. I remember I was very young the first time I heard Rush Limbaugh, and everybody was talking bad about him then. But I thought, when I listened to him, that he was trying to give everybody the other side of the story, a lot like Paul Harvey, that he was trying to show people that there's always several sides to every issue. And I appreciated that. Didn't mean I had to agree with him, or did anyone else have to agree with him. But it meant, you know, that things are always not what they seem. And I appreciated that. Now, he's just too mean and rude. And he took a lot of the class out of his act, you might say. And for me, it kind of invalidates what he says. You don't have to be a jerk to make your point. You don't have to make somebody else look like a piece of crap so that you look better. You just don't have to. If you have
enough, it's almost like he's trying to live up to his own reputation.
Well, and how does everybody look? I don't know. Well, that's like an issue in a lot of different places, a big issue. The fact that I worked with somebody for a long time whose favorite saying was, when you point your finger at someone else, three are pointing back at you. And this particular person was the biggest offender of that scenario.
The total biggest offender.
And I can remember having them say that to me and looking at them and thinking to myself, oh, my good Lord, if you only knew. Because you wouldn't have been able to tell them because, you know, they wouldn't have accepted it. That's something else that you learn when you spend as much time with people as I have. Some people are ready and available to listen to constructive criticism if it's done with and caring. And some people never will be, no matter how you sugarcoat it or how you apply it. They want nothing to do with it. They want to be right, pure and simple, and righteous. And there's no change in their mind, you know. That's funny because I'm thinking when I just said constructive criticism, I have a tendency to say that to people now because I think to myself sometimes I get too know-it-all-ish. I'm old, and I think that I've been around the block more times than a 25-year-old. And I'll say something, and now I catch myself saying, you know, I can just sit with this and keep it to myself unless you want to hear it because I don't need to tell you this. But can you handle some constructive criticism? And if they say yes, then it opens a door a little bit instead of trying to hand constructive criticism to a closed door. And
the whole thing is, if people would lighten up a little bit about themselves and not be so serious, and if people would just understand that we're human beings, we're going to make mistakes, don't blow them out of proportion because that's what makes people dig their heels in and try to defend themselves. I don't know why people have such a problem with admitting they've made a mistake. But if you never admit you make a mistake, then that means you're never going to stop that particular behavior. It means you're just going to keep doing it over and over and over again because you're not going to put out the effort to fix something that you don't think is broken. So if you would just ease up a little bit and laugh at yourself, if you make a mistake, I mean, even if it can be costly. I've made some pretty costly mistakes in my life, yet I still feel good about myself. You know, I didn't define myself by that mistake. You know, I was like, wow, I can't believe I did that. Well, not going to ever do that again. But if I didn't come to terms with it, if, you know, if you sit there and you blame everybody around you and you say, oh, I made that bad judgment because so-and-so told me to, or somebody gave me this advice or whatever. No, you're responsible for what decisions you make. You know, if you have 12 people telling you that you should do a certain thing and then you do it and it turns out not to be a good thing, that's your responsibility because it's ultimately your decision. It has to make sense to you. And if you thought it was a good idea and it still didn't work out, then at least you know that that's never going to work and, you know, pick yourself up and move in another direction. But I think people do themselves a disservice when they don't lighten up and admit they made a mistake and then look to improve their life somehow. Say, okay, well, I'm not going to engage in that activity anymore, or I'm not going to make that decision again, or, you know, or whatever. And then that's how you take control of your life. But if you walk around never admitting you make a mistake, always over-defending yourself, first of all, it's difficult for people to deal with you. Secondly, it's unrealistic. And then you never have the opportunity to improve and make your life better, and you always have a sense of lack of control. That's probably the worst thing that comes out of not taking responsibility or admitting that you make mistakes, is that you never feel like your life is under control. You're just constantly defending yourself to people like, nope, I didn't do that. That wasn't a bad decision. That was so-and-so's fault, you know. And what a lousy way to live. I'd rather take responsibility, laugh at myself, and move on and have people be easy around me.
Well, and I think that's a really big, valid point. The fact that you seldom, when you're behaving like that, you seldom fool anybody but yourself. Other people, I mean, unless they're not paying any attention to you at all, and there can be that scenario, or, you know, they just don't, I don't know, have any feelings about, you know, you and your input, then it's different. Then who cares, because they don't care. But you're right. It's a much easier life to pretend, rather than pretend to be somebody that you're not by being yourself and accepting your flaws and trying to work on them, is much easier on everybody. And I think that's one of the things that causes so much stress, you know, people trying to be somebody that they're not. I mean, I hear people all the time, oh, I did this and I did that, and I look at them and I think to myself, you have no idea that everybody in this room knows that you didn't do that and that you don't do that. You know, have you ever been someplace where you've listened to somebody talk about themselves personally, and their analysis of themselves is so far off from the way other people look at them that it's, like, shocking. Shocking.
I know. Well, you know, it used to crack me up because it's like, I haven't watched the last two seasons, but I was a big fan of America's Got Talent. I watched it for years and running. And it was so funny because every time you'd get this contestant that would be, like, in front of the camera going, oh, I have this wonderful voice, or I'm like this amazing dancer, and I just can't wait for the audience to hear me, and they'd just be touting their own capabilities. They'd usually get out in front of the camera and, you know, sound like a cat being ran over by a car. It was just like horrible sounds coming out of them, you know, and it always shocked me because they would go out there thinking they were so phenomenal and they were like horrible, not even halfway talented. It was actually painful to listen to them. And then the other people that were very humble and like, you know, look, I'm really nervous. You know, I've never, you know, sang in front of an audience like this. I hope people like me. And they were like almost the opposite personality are the ones that would get out there and everybody's jaw would drop, and you would just be like, oh, my God, that voice came out of that person, you know? And it always struck me funny that the people that were really talented are the ones that were almost humbled by it, and the ones that really thought they were good and had to tell everybody how good they were the ones that really had no talent. And it was funny that I always it happened so many times. It happened over and over and over again, you know? And it was like every time I saw somebody saying how good they were, there was only one person that said that and actually was really good. But I would say like 99% of the time, the people that touted themselves like that, and there's nothing wrong with being proud, but they did it in a, like, I'm better than everybody else kind of way, almost kind of an obnoxious way. There's a way of selling yourself without being obnoxious, but the ones that were mostly obnoxious were the ones that actually weren't talented at all. And it's almost like they were trying to convince people with their words instead of actually what they were doing. You know, maybe I'll distract them and they'll think I'm good because I'm telling them I'm good, you know?
You know, that's so funny that you bring that up because you're absolutely right. I mean, I've watched America's Got Talent many seasons. I'm not an avid follower, but, you know, every now and then I'll see it's on and I'll watch it. The beginning of the season this year, I watched it a few times. I haven't watched it recently, but I did watch it a few times. And I thought to myself, isn't it funny? That happens every time. The ones that they interview in the back of the house who say, you know, oh, yeah, I've been doing this, and, you know, I sing at church, and I do this, and I do that, and expound about how wonderful they are, and they get out there, and you're like, oh, my God, you know, what are you thinking? And don't the people in your family love you? You know?
I know. So, it's like, oh, my God, did anybody think of stopping you?
It's like some of them, you know, you wonder, you realize very early on that they're marching to their own drummer. And, yeah. I mean, sometimes, especially now with the panel that's there now, Howie and Howard and the Spice Girl there and Heidi, their personality.
I was shocked by the new, because I just came across it the other day. It's like almost completely through this season. I never saw it from the beginning. I didn't even know they had the other new judges. Howie and Stern were the only ones I had known from, I guess, 2 years ago. I completely missed it last year. But I didn't know that they had the other two women on there.
And they're wonderful. I mean, you know, even Heidi, who seems to be almost genteel, I know she's not, but her behavior is that she'll look at somebody and shake her head and say, I'm sorry, I don't even know why you're out here. You know, but she's not mean. Howard, of course, has to be, you know, either he tries to be profound all the time, whether he's being rude or whether he's being supportive. And
right.
Howie, funny. And the Spice Girl, why can't I think of her name? Anyway, she's adorable, too, and she just gets all excited about the one she loves. I love, 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 love you, you know, and you're, and sometimes she cries, she, you know, so you know that they're really getting into it. But, of course, the biggest entertainment, I think, on the show is Nick. I think he's an amazing entertainer, amazing.
Yeah, I have to put you on that. My favorite person is Nick. Because no matter what the judges are doing or what the contestants are doing, he's like his own show. He interacts with the acts. And what's hilarious is the ones that are really, really bad, he just has fun with them.
Yeah.
You know, he's a ball.
Yeah, I love him. I love him. He's the best. I mean, he so far outshines the other dude there, who's moved on to greater and bigger things. But I think Nick surpasses all of them. He's even done some of the acrobats and stuff like that and tried to climb a pole, and he's very funny and very entertaining. Well, believe it or not, we're out of time, and we did get our full 60 minutes. But I want to thank everybody and let you all know that, yes, I will not be on the air Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but we'll be back on the air Friday morning. I'm going to South Carolina to watch my 18-year-old grandson graduate from the Army boot camp. And then he comes back and does his final year of high school, and then he will be in the reserves and be going to college. So we are very proud of him. And, of course, he's been gone 10 weeks, and every letter I get I have to hear about eat and can't wait to be back home by grandma. So it's kind of cute. But we will we'll be back Friday and promise that Shell will do some more research on Michael Brown. And next week I want to do a story about Harry Houdini because of the movie that's out. I'm going to ask Shell, and I'm going to do this myself. Let's do a little research because I remember watching the original movie with Tony Curtis about Houdini. Very, very, very interesting character, and I think it would be fun to do a show about the truth about Harry Houdini and some of the things he...
I have one true story about him that a lot of people don't know, which really is not only says something about Harry Houdini, but also says something about our perceptions of illusions and tricks like that. So I'll make sure that I tell that story because it's quite the... It was something that surprised me when I heard it.
Well, I think he's a very interesting character, and I think it'll be fun to talk about him. So if you've got any input on magic or the world of magic or Harry Houdini, call in, 347-152. Oh, sorry, wrong number. No. Where's my host pen?
The show number is 347-989-0352.
Perfect. I drew a blank, and I say it a million times a day. So
I know.
Thanks, and I will talk to you on Friday, Shell, and I'll be back Friday morning, new time, 8 o'clock. Bye-bye. God bless. Thanks, honey.
All right. Have a wonderful trip in South Carolina, and we'll see you again on Friday. Talk to everyone.
Perfect.
Have a wonderful week.
Bye-bye.